Heya, welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepwe, also known as Aka. That's the coolest thing ever, right? I really need you guys to comment this and say, Aka, that's too cool, or Aka, stop it. Whichever would work for everybody. But today is a good day. It's a Friday. We're recording this on a Friday. Me and the guests are very excited that it's a Friday because I think that Fridays are days to lay back, but one of my favorite days is a Monday. When I get rich, I will not work on a Monday. I'll make my Friday a Monday. But that's a story for another day. So today's guest is somebody I'm about to call her my favorite, but she is. So I got to kind of research her and learn about her work and the things she's been doing. And it's about advocacy. When I started out, before I got into the business kind of thing, I enjoyed advocacy. My advocacy was on climate change, financial literacy. So that's the type of advocacy I have done in the past. So going back to the world and having a conversation with somebody that is advocating for really good causes where they're from in the US, it's something I can't wait to learn about and get to know her a little bit more. So I hope everybody enjoys the conversation. With that being said, drum roll please. Today's guest is Ife Tayo. Ife, did I pronounce your name correctly? Like, you know in your picture?
Yes, you did.
It's a win. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you so much for being here. It's a Friday. This is probably going to air on a Tuesday, but I hope they feel the energy of this being a Friday. For us, for the two of us doing it today. So you do amazing work. And if I got to meet you at an event, or if I get to meet you for the first time, how best do you introduce yourself?
Oh, man. Well, to be honest, I'm pretty, in person, I can be a little shy.
You don't sound shy.
Yes, I can be a little shy. But if I were to introduce myself, I would say that I'm an advocate, I'm a speaker, I'm a writer. I've been doing drug policy reform work for about 12 years now. And I started speaking about my experience growing up with my father in prison and ultimately deported from the US, and talking about how that affects children and families and communities. So, like you said, I'm an advocate. I'm a, you know, person who's very concerned with social justice, and overall just a person who's really curious about everyone's story. I believe everyone has a story that we can all learn from, and I hope that by sharing my story, I can, you know, incite bravery in others to share their story.
I like that. But it also brings me to, with the current states, so Ife is from the US, New York. So with the current state the US is in right now, isn't your type of work harder? Like your advocacy, because from us, we can see what's going on, but you're on the ground, you do this work, you've been doing it for so many years now. How is it impacting your current work now? And what do you actually think will be the actual impact of what they have been doing with immigration the next 10 years to children who are going to be adults by then?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for that question. I think that when we look at this moment that we're in the United States, a lot of times we don't realize that, you know, this process unfolds slowly, but also quickly at the same time, if that makes sense, right? So a year or two ago, we were starting to see less and less investment and support for psychedelics, especially organizations like mine that are doing community building and grassroots work. There's a lot of investment in the medical or clinical side of psychedelics. A lot of, you know, the tech money is being poured into that side. But when it comes to making psychedelics accessible and affordable and safe for the average person, especially the average Black person in America or person of color in America, there's a lack of investment and infrastructure on that side. And so, you know, that we saw that happening a couple of years ago. And fast forward to this moment that we're in now, you know, with all of these ICE immigration kidnappings and detainments that we're seeing, everyone's on edge. People are fearful. You know, we have, in my group, we have folks who are immigrants here on visas. And we have to change the way that we work together to keep those people safe. You know, I'm hearing stories of people are afraid to go to church, afraid to go to school, afraid to go to work, because they don't know if immigration is going to show up at their place of employment, their place of worship, and kidnap them, right? And so we have folks who are afraid to do the everyday responsibilities that they have to do to make ends meet. And so when you talk about psychedelics or healing, that is seen as more of a leisurely thing or luxury for most people in the U.S. So I think as a result, people are going to put their healing, their mental health on the back burner because they're just so focused on surviving at this point. And we as, you know, leaders and mental health advocates, we have to reach those people as well and not forget them and remind them that, you know, surviving is important, but we also have to build the spaces for people to connect, to heal, and to, you know, share their stories and be seen and be heard.
I can sense that the atmosphere is tense, but you've also mentioned that a lot of people will put mental health and to the backside because they're just trying to survive. It's now going to be survival for the fittest. Who can, at least for the next 3 years, survive this and wait for the next government or for new policies to come in? Yeah, it's a lot. It does sound like a lot, and it does bring like a new challenge for your work. What inspired you to found your organization?
Yeah. It's definitely, yes, we're definitely going to have to keep pivoting and adjust to the moment we're in. I agree with that. And in terms of what inspired me to create this organization, you know, so I got into this work when I was a college student, talking about mass incarceration in the U.S. and how that disproportionately affects Black folks, Latino folks, Native American folks. And then I got into psychedelics just by learning about end-of-life treatment and psychedelics. I was at a conference, and that really piqued my interest. And I was also struggling with my own mental health in that moment. This is back in 2013. I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder. And after attending that panel on end of life treatment, you know, they're talking about people who have terminal illnesses, who are given 6 months or maybe a year to live. So hearing about that as someone who has depression, you know, who struggles with suicidal ideation, that inspired me to try mushrooms, right? And I had my first experience and it was amazing. It felt like a refresh. I laughed, I cried, and I felt things I hadn't felt in such a long time, right? And so that was back in 2013. Fast forward to 2015, I'm working for the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, an organization also known as MAPS. They do clinical research, mainly around psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. So a lot of their research focuses on MDMA. And while I was there, I was the only Black person who worked there. And I realized that Black people of color were not being included in their research really well. And race and racial trauma was just not being talked about. And to me, this seemed like a really big blind spot because, you know, I'm descended from enslaved African people. I'm five generations removed from that. And so I'm very aware of intergenerational trauma in the Black community, how enslavement still affects us to this day. And so I was surprised that that wasn't being addressed in this research. And so after I left MAPS, I started seeking out people and organizations who were talking about race and healing with psychedelics. And I was really dissatisfied with a lot of the conversations that were happening around that topic because I felt like they weren't going far enough. And in 2016, I wrote a piece for a symposia called Why the Psychedelic Community is So White. And that got a lot of traction. And people started reaching out to me who were also concerned about the lack of diversity and inclusion in the field. And we started having informal Zoom calls talking about this issue. And things just slowly evolved and formalized where we started doing projects together, you know, really raising awareness around the contributions and impact that people of color, both past and present, have had on the field. And when we realized that there was such a hunger or a thirst for this work, that there were people of color around the country who wanted to have spaces like the ones we were creating, we realized that, you know, we have to formalize. And that's why we became a nonprofit. And yeah, that's really what inspired me to create this organization, just seeing the lack of spaces for people who look like me, and also the desire to create a space that was safe enough for people to talk about their experiences. Yeah. And how, you know, it had a positive impact. A lot of times when you talk about drug use, especially in the US, it focuses on the negative side of things, drug addiction, overdose. But we have to understand that people use substances for a reason. A lot of times we're self-medicating, we're trying to heal, but we lack the proper tools and resources to really do that. So I wanted to create a space where people could address all of those things.
It's given me a lot to think about. When we previously talked, you talked about how this was also something inspired because of your dad. So I'm trying to kind of marry the two and see how they're related. And just a side note, in Zambia, we don't get to talk about mental health a lot. It's still something foreign. There's conversations about it now. Mm-hmm. It's a sexy thing to talk about. It's very trendy. But we never really go in depth. And one thing I also realized was the system actually does have people that are specialized in this. Mm-hmm. But they're underfunded, or it was just something no one actually looked for, right? Like, everybody, it's a shame-based thing for you to seek help. Because I had to get my therapist. My therapist is from America. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. So we get to have our Zoom call. Yeah. And even with that, I've had her for like 2 years now. Mm-hmm. My mom, she doesn't understand why I have a therapist and I have checking calls, and there's just a lot in my life that I always unpack that I can't unpack with my mom or my family or my friends. So there's a lot I've learned about myself. So I actually love that your organization does acknowledge that people use substances, but people use substances for different reasons. And I think today I was talking to somebody and I was like, I don't self-medicate because every time I have done that, I have gotten worse, or I was medicating for the wrong. That was just a symptom, but that was not the actual thing that was wrong with me. So everybody's like, you're always at the doctor's. And I'm like, yes, because I'm still trying to figure out what's wrong with my body. So with all that, I really have loved how your organization is breaking down and really touching people at the core. And I also understand why your target audience are Black people, because like you said, a lot of people were not, the conversations in the other rooms were not for someone like you, and you wanted to create a space for someone like you to be heard. So right now, how is it going, and how does this relate to your experience with your father?
Yes, thank you. You know, it's funny because I never envisioned myself doing this kind of work. It just kind of happened this way, right? But in terms of my experience with my father, what I've realized over time is that I was forced to understand the war on drugs before it was really age appropriate for me. And even as a kid, I didn't fully understand why, you know, my father selling substances was a crime, right? Because in my head, I thought, well, if people want to do these substances, they should be allowed to do them, right? Yeah. and part of, you know, I still believe that, right? And I understand, you know, some people will say, oh, well, you know, these substances could kill you. They could cause harm. They could cause issues. And that's 100% true. But we cannot use criminalization as a solution to everything. My dad, he wasn't a drug user. He was a drug seller. And he was doing that because he came from a poor country. And that was an easy way to make money. It was a easy way to make a lot of money. And when you understand that, you understand that drug dealers aren't out to kill people or to hurt people a lot of times. A lot of times, drug dealers also are harm reductionists. So as a kid, I thought that no one could relate to my story. But then once I started seeing how common it was for immigrants to be deported over a drug offense, you know, my dad was selling drugs at I would say maybe a mid to higher level. He wasn't a guy on the street selling drugs. But I've read so many stories of people being deported over smoking a joint or having a very small amount of drugs. And so what I've realized is that, you know, you can disagree with what someone's doing, but at the end of the day, justice isn't about checking off a box. It's about doing what's right and making people whole. And so I've seen how the war on drugs has destroyed so many people's lives, whether you were using drugs, selling drugs, and it hasn't made the problem any better. This practice of incarcerating people, criminalizing people, makes the problem worse. And so, to me, it's about a larger, deeper problem of, do we have sovereignty over our bodies? Are we allowed to put substances that we like into our bodies? Does our society have a safety net for people who struggle with problematic use? I think the other thing is that a lot of times when we talk about drugs and drug use, you know, people point to addiction, they point to overdose, when in reality, people who struggle with addiction make up a small percentage of drug users. And so I think that there's been a lot of propaganda since the creation of the war on drugs, and we have to combat that misinformation and re-educate ourselves about substance use. I think for me as a kid and as a teenager, I was afraid of substances because I associated them on some level with my dad, and I didn't want to be criminalized in the way that he was, because as a child of a formerly incarcerated person, something we often internalize is that our parents' fate will be our fate as well, inevitably. And so I think, you know, my work in psychedelics connects to my father's story in the sense that, you know, these substances have helped me heal that abandonment, that separation that I experienced with my dad being in prison and being deported. But it's also taught me that we have sovereignty over our bodies, and we should be allowed to choose what we want to do with them without criminalization. We should instead have social safety net support if, you know, when that is needed.
Ife, what do you think is a conversation that society is not ready to have, but eventually we're going to end up having it?
I would say a conversation we're not ready to have is that most of us adults are drug users one way or the other, and we use drugs for fun, for productivity, for relaxation, and that's okay. And we all judge each other for our substance, whether that be alcohol, whether that be coffee, whether that be, you know, weed, cocaine, pills, prescription medication. We all judge each other, even though we're all drug users.
I think so too. I because I'm listening to you speak and I'm like, I might be under that category. But because I can, I still look fine and I can still function without the drugs, does that make me not a drug user? Right? Like the certain drugs certain people are taking, right? So the only, I think the only difference that's making with the other, when you flip the coin the other side, is that we can still function without them. We don't need them to be productive, right?
Right.
Or others do. Others do. And, yeah, but we're not at the stage where I'm anxious and I'm having panic attacks because I'm not taking this drug.
Mm-hmm.
We are still taking a level amount of drugs. And that's a lot of people around the world, not just in the US. But we judge others that have just slightly gone above us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. So yeah, I don't think we're ready to start telling each other the truth.
Or redefining
what drug abuse is for everybody or for ourselves. I like to think as an individual. Like, what's drug abuse for me as an individual? And what drugs am I abusing that might not be good for me? It might not be cocaine. It might not be weed. Like, it might not be the extreme. But I am abusing something. It could be coffee. It could be certain things. So what am I doing that is harming me?
Yeah. And I think it's important to really... It's ultimately about what's your relationship, right?
Yeah.
What's your relationship with this substance? What's your relationship with this behavior? And it doesn't always have to be substances. Sometimes, it's, you know, maybe you are on the internet too much, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people in the harm reduction movement have kind of stepped away from using terms like abuse because they feel that it adds additional stigma. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to use less stigmatizing language, but the point still stands, right? Is my relationship with this substance impeding my day-to-day responsibilities? Is it becoming a problem for my friendships, my family relationships, my work relationships? You know, asking those kinds of questions, I think, is important for anyone. No matter where you are on the spectrum of substance use. So, you know, I think that's also just harm reduction in general for us to, you know, pay attention to what version of ourselves shows up when we're engaging with different substances.
That also made me think of redefining the word substances, right? Because you really did bring up a very important point, right? It might not just be substances like cocaine, pills, weed, and everything when it comes to abusing of substances. It could be your relationship with your, it could be a romantic relationship. It could be a relationship with technology, with social media and everything. Certain things are harming you. They're just harming you differently, right? And because we have put spectrums on certain things and have normalized other stuff and said, the other stuff, nah, these are what's out of the box and we can judge everybody out of the box. But if I spend 10 hours on TikTok, I'm not addicted. I'm not abusing anything, but you are, you know? It's, and in a world of AI and a lot of technology popping up, we need to start having conversations like this. That's okay, great. Substance abuse of these type of drugs actually exists. But can we also start talking about this? I don't know if substance is the word, but can we also start talking about the abuse of these things, like technology and this and this and this? How does it harm you to do that and that and that and that? Because you might find that it might go down for the normal drugs we've been associated with, but it's peaking on the other end on certain things like technology and whatever is going on this time in the world. So yeah, I just think that we need to start redefining a lot of words, a lot of stuff for ourselves, and start having these conversations, because it's actually happening fast. It's very fast. No one is keeping up. No one is keeping up. No one is paying attention to their kids. No one's paying attention to what's going around when teenagers are together. Because they're like, as long as it's not drugs. Yes, as long as it's not cocaine, as long as, but it could have the same effect. It's a, it might not just be done the same.
That's so, and you know, this is another issue I'm very passionate about. I don't want to get on my soapbox, but
please do.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, especially, you know, you mentioned AI, and it's just been so mind-boggling to see this rise of AI in the U.S. I'm noticing it in my friendships, in professional relationships, where, you know, my friends are saying like, oh yeah, I talked to ChatGPT. And I'm like, huh? Like, what do you mean? That they're telling me they asked ChatGPT for professional advice. They think ChatGPT is his friend. There's the whole conversation around college students using it. And just a couple days ago, ChatGPT was down, non-functional for some hours.
I didn't notice, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know, some people were just, they lost it. They didn't know what to do. And I think there's something to be said about this dependence that a lot of these tech companies are trying to create on AI. I think that I'm concerned about it because, to me, creativity and critical thinking is a muscle. And when we start to kind of outsource that muscle to artificial intelligence, we start to lose that muscle mass, right? And the other thing is that AI also has implications for on people and on our planet, right? 60 Minutes did a report last year interviewing Kenyan workers who were talking about how, you know, these AI companies were coming to Kenya and promising good jobs, and they were being exploited. You know, they're forced to look through really harmful, messed up videos and graphics without any mental health support, and they're not being paid well, right? So you have that aspect. And then you also have the environmental aspect, where lots of water is needed to cool the machines that are used for AI. And so, you know, I've been paying attention to people who've been studying this for years, and they're saying, they're waving the flag, they're sounding the alarm and saying like, look, we need to slow it down a bit. And I think especially when it comes to young people and kids, we really need to question our relationship with technology, with the internet, with social media. You know, I was just talking about questioning our relationship with substances. And, and I think this is a really big one that people, you know, when you talk about it, people are kind of in denial, like, no, I don't have a problem with internet dependency, addiction, or whatever. I don't, you know, people are in denial about it, but I do think it has changed a lot of how, you know, we conduct our social relationships and friendships. So I always try to tell people to take breaks, try to see if you can go some days without social media, take an hour of screen free time and get back in touch with yourself and the physical world around you.
That's a good one to note. So for the past 4 years, just right after COVID, mm-hmm. or like during COVID, I started taking breaks from social media. So Sunday is my no social media day. Like, if my friends want to reach me, they do have my private WhatsApp. They can call me, they can iMessage me, but I will not be on social media. And now I actually started having like at least a month of no social media. And this is like in June. Hey, I just was having panic attacks and being anxious. And I just said, you know what? I will not die if I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook that much. I'm not on TikTok. I use LinkedIn for work. But the relationship is better and I feel so much better. The key word from this conversation is, I think it's to question a lot of stuff. Right? Because mm-hmm. even for me, I always ask myself, what's the type of relationship I want to have with AI, right? I do want to learn, because a lot of tools that we use for productivity now have incorporated AI, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it makes it all easy, but I do not know how to use the tool in the first place. But when you put AI making it easy, it won't take away the fact that I do not know how to use the tool.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so now I'm still learning how to use certain things, but AI makes it look easy, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, in the real world, you still have to have your critical thinking side, you still have to make decisions when things go wrong, you mm-hmm. still have to do everything without AI.
Mm-hmm.
And my fear is, and this is coming from a person that is learning about AI a lot, is really does use AI in her work, mm-hmm. is that we're gonna have a generation of people that can't make decisions. Mm-hmm. You can prompt AI to make a decision, but you can't make a decision on your own. And if AI is in my chat message, like, oh, you can write a text with AI on WhatsApp, you can write an email with AI, like the most basic things, AI can do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I was doing that. Then I was like, well, now I can't write an email? I've been doing this. I'm like, it's okay if I make a mistake, if I have a typo, if I don't put it a correct punctuation. It's okay. I'm human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really trying, we're really trying to remove the human touch of it. And yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting post-AI. Right, mm-hmm. I saw a post where somebody said, when a post AI, you really have to know what to do mm-hmm. and what not to do and not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's a lot that's going to be happening, and we really just have to be in the middle, because also it's something you can't stop, it's mm-hmm. really here to stay. But we're really not just questioning, we're not asking ourselves, and the thing I think is going to trend is, we're all going to blame the governments. We're all going to blame, oh no, the government didn't put any policies. Oh no, the companies were immoral. They should have thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
What's your personal responsibility for not thinking the type of relationship you wanted to have with artificial intelligence? Because it's going to define everything in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my stance, is what's the relationship I want to have? And I'm very particular with my younger sister. She has no gadget. Her gadget died and I never replaced it.
Oh.
So it's like she has no screen time. Her screen time is very reduced to my phone, my mom's phone. So we have control over that. So it's like, what personal responsibility are we going to take? What personal responsibility are parents and guardians going to take for them not paying attention to certain things when it comes to technology? Which is another substance abuse, by the way. I'm really getting passionate about this.
Yeah. And I think it's so, oh man, I'm glad you mentioned your sister. And
yeah.
I think, we really need to, and that personal responsibility element too, right? Because, people say, the government, the tech companies, and it's like, that's just another example of how people, refuse responsibility for themselves. And we have to really own up to our own habits. And if you're a parent or a guardian of a child, you also have to realize the implications that young people are even more vulnerable to like having dependency on tech and internet, social media and stuff like that. And something I'm very concerned about is, young girls and body image and beauty standards. I feel like we're already seeing a change here in the States where, young girls are using beauty products that are too mature for them or too harsh for them. I have 4 nieces who range in age from 18 to 2 years old. And, they'll say to me like, "Oh, Ife, do you know Drunk Elephant?" And I'm like, "Drunk Elephant is a skincare brand, but it's a very expensive skincare brand." I'm like, "Wait, why do you know about that?" And it's not suitable for their skin, right? But they're seeing these products on TikTok. And so, it's this kind of consumption habit where we think we need to buy our beauty, we need to buy our looks, when it's really about accepting who you are and loving that person. And I'm just already seeing, young girls who are like, "Oh, I'm fat," and it's like you're so
scared. My younger sister says that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Hey, I get offended. And I'm like, "Do I need to come speak to your teacher?" You're 12.
Yeah.
It's okay. You eat what you want to eat. And I'm so sorry to cut you short. I just think that this set of parenting is not letting kids be kids, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do not know why. I do not know who broke, which generation it is that is parenting at this point, but I know Gen Zs and millennials and the older generations are all parents, but those to the youngest kids below 10 could be mostly millennials and Gen Zs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why do we all think it's okay to buy makeup for kids?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that a trend, right? Like, why is it like a soft life kind of thing? I get it. Why are we doing it for babies? Like, why are you teaching a child who's 2, like, "Oh, you should got your pedicure, you should do your nails, you should put some lip gloss"? What happened to kids just being kids?
Yeah. And what I think it is that this generation, because we have phones and cameras, we're so obsessed with the visuals, how everything looks. We're looking at ourselves way more than we did. And so that causes people to scrutinize their looks and their features. Whereas like in the past, before, cell phones were so widespread, we didn't look at ourselves as much. We weren't so concerned, especially as kids and teenagers, we weren't concerned with being put together. There were always those 1 or 2 people, in school who were, we called them pretty girls, pretty boys, whatever. But, on the larger level, we were pretty relaxed about that stuff. And I think there's a different set of expectations now for young folks in terms of how you present and also having a social media presence. And I think, it's concerning because we're raising a generation that doesn't know what life is like without those platforms. And I think that connects to our ability to reflect, right? When we are, able to reflect on something that happened last week or 2 months ago, 3 years ago. It's different when you add social media into the mix and you're constantly sharing to an audience and performing. there's a writer who, you know, gets to this point really well. His name is Jaron Lanier. He's, I guess, considered one of the fathers of virtual reality, but he writes a lot about technology, social media, why it's not good for you. And something he says is like, how can you share yourself if you don't know yourself? Right.
Ooh.
So, you know, we're constantly sharing these tidbits of our life, but we're robbing ourselves of that moment to just reflect. Say you went to a concert and it was really amazing and you had a great time. But nowadays, you know, we're so set on capturing that moment on film. We're making videos. We're sharing it to our stories. But have we even given ourselves a chance to really sit with what it means to us on a personal level? Or are we just so quick to share it with other people? And so that's something that I think we need to kind of slow down a bit and think like, okay, this is an enjoyable experience for me. What does it mean to me before
we move
into that performance mode? Oh, let me share it on social media to, you know, show all my friends and, you know, look like I'm doing something cool or whatever. I think it also can be a distraction, right?
Yeah.
We're so set on sharing those positive things, sharing the highlight reel of our life. We don't necessarily reflect in the present.
Or just be in the moment. Mm-hmm. You speaking reminds me, this past weekend I was with my younger cousins, mm-hmm. and I was in my youngest cousin's bedroom, so I slept there. And I think we were up at 7. It was a Sunday. We were up at 7 or 8. And he wanted to play his PlayStation 5.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, wait, what? You just woke up.
Yep.
I said, no, what? We're not, you're not switching that on. He's like, yeah, no, honey, you're not. And he didn't switch it on. We waited to, I think, 11. Then he was like, can I go play now? I'm like, yes, sweetheart. You can go play now. Like, let's talk to each other. It's in the morning. Let's all say hi. Let's brush our teeth. Let's read a book. Let's go outside. Let's have some fresh air. Let's eat our breakfast. Let's talk. Mm-hmm. Then we can all go into our little worlds and do whatever we want to do. And I was like, oh my goodness, I feel so grown. Now that I have to say no.
Yeah.
I will have a stack of books if you come to my house for your entertainment, by the way.
Yeah.
Literally, I don't pay for the TV and I have a library. And whoever visits goes like, oh my goodness, it's so boring here. I'm like, there's so many books in my room. Please get a book and read, ne? Go to the garden and read. Mm-hmm. Or talk to somebody. Or take a nap. Or write. Whatever works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree, and I think I have to tell myself that too. I have to fight that impulse, right? And I think I don't want people to get the impression that I'm saying like, oh, throw your computers away, throw your cell phones away. That's not what I'm saying. But what I've realized is that this technology is kind of designed to make us isolated in a way, right? From our environment, from our community. You know, nowadays when I walk around New York City, you see tons of people, they're walking on the street, but they're looking at their phone, right? They're not making eye contact. They're not aware of their environment. You see people who have their headphones in. And, you know, I love walking around listening to music too, but it can also be a safety issue. And it can also keep you from connecting with people in your community. Maybe someone, you know, wants to say hello to you. Maybe you drop something and someone's telling you, hey, you dropped something.
Yeah.
Maybe you just missed a nice compliment someone was giving you.
So, I know.
So we have
so much to see in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, like there's so much to see, And us being constantly on our phone, I always have my AirPods on, but I don't have my phone in my hand. I'm playing my music, but I can see, and I'm present, I'm listening to my music, but I can still see and I can still appreciate what's happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
I just, that's gonna go away, which is sad. And I know this is gonna sound as if two ladies are just being against technology. I use technology, and I am that person too. I have to remind myself not to be too consumed with the life online that I miss with what's happening around me. I just think we're not having this conversation because we all don't want to be judged, because we all do it. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I'm not doing it. I do it. I judge myself. But we're not having it honestly because we don't want to get judged. Just about substance abuse. We don't want to get judged about so many things. So we don't have those conversations, which is sad to live in a world like that.
Yeah. And, you know, part of my desire and inspiration for creating my organization was so people can have those real conversations. You know, I used to volunteer on like mental health chat lines, talking to people about their problems anonymously. And what I realized is that so many of us are stuck in our pain. We don't have the space, or we don't feel comfortable really talking about what we're dealing with. And so how do we create a society or community where people can be real with one another about their struggles? I think it's like a long-term thing we have to continuously work at, is changing our culture. You know, you talked about how in Zambia, mental health is kind of taboo. And when you were sharing about, you know, how your mom doesn't understand why you go to therapy, I related to that as well, because it's an issue here, you know. Even though it's not as taboo as it once was, we still have a lot of work to do on that front. And I think one way we can combat the stigma, the taboo around mental health, is building it into the community spaces that we already have, right? So how can we, you know, there's people who go to their places of worship, right? And I think for a lot of folks, that is community, that is mental health. So how can we improve it? Right? How can we make it more explicit in those spaces? How can we, you know, have these conversations in the barbershop or the hair salon? Or, you know, just in other places that we know people are going to be talking anyways?
Yeah. That's a good question to ask. And I hope people listening, I hope this conversation just gives you some sort of mind opening. We kind of touched on a lot of stuff, which I love. But I hope it leaves you with you had an open mind to think about and leave with questions that only you can answer and only you can start asking your community.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to know, what advice would you give to someone wanting to use their voice to create a positive change?
My advice would be to, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So yeah. Nourish yourself, take breaks, ask for help. A lot of times people who are in these roles of, you know, doing healing work, doing work to create a positive change or solve society's problems, we overextend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to go far doing that. So we have to take breaks, ask for help, ask for support. And the other piece of advice I would say is, if you get negative reactions to your work, that could be a good thing. You're striking a nerve in people. And that's okay. That's going to happen. And sometimes that's a good sign to keep going. So, yeah, just keep going.
I like that. I like that. I will keep those. I will keep that to myself. And I will implement that in my life. Thank you. I want to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Yes. Okay. So my question for you is, I want to end on a good note or a positive note. what's something that is giving you hope right now?
A hard question. And I'm a very enthusiastic person. Mm-hmm. I always have hope that things are temporary and things will get better. I always have the faith that my mindset is everything is temporary, right? Mm-hmm. Life is a temporary thing. So when you experience happiness, when you experience sadness, when you experience anxiety, depression, whatever that would be,
mm-hmm.
that's temporary. It's just for that moment. There's no one in life that will go through life just experiencing the lows or just experiencing the highs. Mm-hmm. I think that gives me hope. And when I talk about it being temporary, I look at it that temporality doesn't mean it's just going to be a day. Temporality might mean a month, might mean a year, might mean 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a season, and that's just temporality.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me so much hope. Just mm-hmm. the fact that I know that whatever I experience in this moment
mm-hmm.
will eventually get better. Or there's the other side of the coin that is so bright and so happy, and it's everything I dream of, it's everything I want, it's everything I'm working towards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives me hope. Just knowing that gives me hope, and that also gives me appreciation and gratitude, if mm-hmm. I may add. Because you can only know sadness if you've been happy. You can only know heartbreak if you've been in love. Mm-hmm. So this life is so balanced, right? As much as it's temporary, it's so balanced, mm-hmm. right? You can't say, I'm so heartbroken. Then you've been in love before. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Even if it was so temporary, even if it was in that moment, you have been in love. And mm-hmm. I've been a person that has lost loved ones in a short span of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one thing that just breaks my nervous system and I can't operate is when I lose a loved one. And it takes a lot to really just get me back to my A game. And my mm-hmm. therapist says to say, for you to know grief, for you to experience grief in that depth, you've actually loved in that depth.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be grateful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That you experienced that. And you should be grateful for what you have now. So I'm the type of person that knows things are temporal. So if I like somebody, if I have a crush on somebody, and me and that person are getting to know each other, I will savor those moments. And if it doesn't work out, I'm so glad I had you for that moment. For friendships, family, business, and everything. So yeah, that just gives me hope. Knowing that everything in life is temporal gives me so much hope and gratitude and a lot to reflect on and a lot to be grateful for. It's always that. Like, it's a lot to be grateful for because you can only experience one thing if you experience the other. So yeah. That gives me hope every day.
Wow. Wow. Whew. Thank you. Thank you. No, that's so real. So real.
I think it's also maybe a lot happened this week.
Mm-hmm.
So grateful I got to have this conversation with you. And that just is a good way to end the week. Like, the week has been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had every right to say, if I really can't do this. And you'd have probably understood, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Just, missing. But yeah, but I still said I'm gonna show up, and that those moments don't define me, and this is what I'm grateful for, and I'm so grateful for the opportunities I get to have and the people I get to speak to, and you bring me so much light and love in my life, and I do this for people, but I do this for myself more. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whew, that's powerful. And
thank you.
Especially what you shared about grief and gratitude. That's so important. And yeah, something that I, you know, we all have to sit with, right? Yeah. It's almost a contradiction, but that's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes things don't make sense to us in the moment, but you know, as time goes on, we make more sense of things. So yeah,
and also I think, and even with if time goes on and it doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. that's okay. Yeah. I say that to people all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think when people are grieving, we always go like, it's going to get better with time.
Right.
It's not. But mm-hmm. if it does, thank you. And if it doesn't, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, we're supposed to just be grateful that we got to experience those people and we had them for that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's life.
Yep. Yeah.
Ending on a positive note.
Mm-hmm.
What do you look forward to, Ethan?
Oh man. Oh. Man. Well. there's so many things. And I love this question, especially in this moment that we're in right now, where it feels like, especially in the US, where there's not much to look forward to, right? And I think we have to be asking ourselves this question often. But I, you know, I look forward to just connection with, you know, the people in my life, whether it be family, friends, whether it be community, whether it be neighbors, whether it be strangers. I just look forward to connecting with people and building relationships.
Yeah.
Because through those relationships, we learn about ourselves. And you know, given what we were talking about with isolation and technology, yeah. The political situation with people being kidnapped, we need connection now more than ever.
I like that. Thank you so much, Ifeteyo. I loved every minute of this very dynamic conversation I had with you. And I hope that when people listen to this, and when the audience listens to this, I hope they have questions. I know that we can answer those questions because we left with questions.
Mm-hmm.
We're mm-hmm. seeking those questions and question a lot going on. A lot is going on and we need to question as much as we are diving into stuff so that we don't feel formal. Ask questions and ask if this is good for me. I'm always about individuals. Is this good for me? Because if it's not good for you, is it good for your child, for your niece, for your sibling, right? So you start having those conversations because you're just like, be a little bit skeptical about everything you see. Like, don't test everything on power value. So yeah, if anything, I hope that's what they got from this conversation because that's what I got. And I left very whole and grateful for you. And really, it's been an amazing, one of my favorites. I have to, may I add at the end? You're reminding me of a guest. I might connect you to her. She's amazing. Her name is Mpulukeni, and she always leaves me like this every single time after a conversation. I think the two of you would actually hit it off.
Oh, okay. Yes, I would love to connect. And thank you so much. That really means a lot. And I also enjoyed this conversation too. And thank you again for having me as a guest.
Thank you. And for everybody listening, that's the end. I hope you get to share this and listen to it with your friends and family. And comment and let us know what you thought. With that being said, bye for now.